The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Very good, you're right on cue. Welcome along to the Academy, to the GAR Live. It's our last show of the year and you're all welcome. We'll do a little test, Conan. Before we start, this is obviously thanks to our sponsors, AIB. Anyone here from Mayo? Yeah. Dublin? Yeah. All right, it's a little bit panto-y. Mayo? Yeah. Dublin? Yeah. 50-50 here, Conan, so I think we'll have to be equally nice to both of them.
It's going to be very hard for you to do that.
All right, we have a brilliant show. First up will be Kieran McGeaney in a little minute. Then we'll have Sean Kavanagh, then Graham Garrity. That's the first part. Second part will be more of an analysis section with Paul Clark, Ray Cosgrove and Lee McHale. We have a GAA jackass. I went to strip last gym. I took Kieran McGeaney's head off. I drank some whiskey and toasted to good business. Isn't that what it is?
I don't think
so. Anyways,
so.
I didn't take his head off. We have a little clip of what you're going to see. That won't be broadcast. It'll be in the last section.
And that's the whole fight.
Geezer may or may not have allowed me to do that. I'll let you make up your own minds. Right, Colin, another thing we want to get to the bottom of on tonight's show before we start into it is this picture. We need to identify this man in this picture because I tweeted this out a little bit earlier during the year, right? So I tweeted this out. So this man, this kind of elderly man, recorded the Kerry management for the entire... Now, this is no lie. He recorded them for the entire game. This is fact. We need to know, was he from Tyrone or Dublin, and why the hell he was doing it. I can't even begin to think why he was doing it.
And why he didn't record Stephen Rochford.
Well, okay, the fancied Kerry to win. The one person that might help us out, because I suspect it's Dublin. Dublin were strong favourites. They're going to blow Tyrone away. My suspicion is he's part, some way linked to the Dublin management team. And to get to the bottom of it, I'm delighted to call out. He's a very busy man at the moment, and he's got a big game on Sunday. Give it up for Jim Gavin. Jim, thanks very much for taking time out of your busy schedule.
It's a pleasure, Willie.
I know we've had our differences, but to come on the show. Jim, do you have any idea who this man in the picture is? Because there's a lot of rumours going around that he's part of your backroom team.
Well, it's obviously an unfortunate incident. It's obviously Amy Fitzmaurice, I think, that's in the picture, Willie, if I'm not mistaken. But I think it's a regrettable incident, and Kerry are a great team. So are Mayo, a very strong side, and I think we can look forward to a great game tomorrow. I really do. I think it's going to be a great challenge.
Sorry, Jim. We've been down this road before. I know you're a slippery type of character. So I've made this a little bit easier on you, Jim. So we've enlarged the picture. Who is this man, Jim? No bullshit.
Yeah, look, tomorrow's going to be a great challenge. You know, it's all the players.
Get him off. Jim Gavin. All
right. Give it up for Jim Gavin. Half of you can cheer. All right, it's time for our first guest of the night. Give a huge welcome to Geezer, Kieran McGeaney. What's going on, bud?
How's it going?
Good to see you. Yeah. First off, Geezer, congratulations on the reappointment. That's the news that broke this week.
Yeah, another year.
Was it touch and go there or anything, though? You were confident enough?
No, you just never know when you're with sort of the teams that maybe aren't at the top tier. Supporters still want to win All Ireland's, even though that mightn't be just entirely possible that particular year. So there's always a good bit of pressure on, and there's always huge expectations. And, you know, Armagh's a massive football. It's a small county, but there'd be huge element of it that supports GAA, like, so it's there's always a wee bit of pressure.
When you look back on your year, how would you describe it now? Because, like, I mean, it's a real roller coaster year. Like,
probably from the word go, we played reasonably well. Like, we had one bad half against down in the championship. Like, you know, the first half, like, we played pretty well. Like, we just missed quite a bit. And then we had a good sort of campaign in the back door. Like, and we came up against Tyrone. And, you know, like, you know, truth be told, they're just a stronger, better team than us at the minute. And, you know, we were very flat, like, after five or six games too on the trot. But, you know, although, you know, Dublin blew Tyrone out of the water, like, we're just a good bit below that. Like.
Well, that's the thing. If you play that game, ye were hammered by Tyrone, who were hammered by Dublin. So what would Dublin do to Armagh? I know it doesn't work like that. I'm just looking for a little joke.
You know, there's not much point in sort of saying anything other than Dublin's one of the best teams, you know, that has played over the past 30 or 40 years. You know, like, no matter what happens on Sunday, they'll still go down to that. They've won four of the last five, six All-Irelands. You know, they're going for a fifth. Like, you know, you can't take it away from them. They're an incredible team.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt they're an incredible team. So, like, I mean, you were beaten by Tipperary really disappointingly with a last-minute goal. Then, you know, there's pressure that you didn't get out of Division 3. Then the down game, you were favourites, which, you know, in hindsight, it was a bit crazy with a Division 3 team being favourites over Division, really strong favourites, and then you lost that. Were you feeling a lot of pressure then?
Well, I was getting plenty of abuse if that equates to pressure. Not yes and no. Like, you feel disappointed for the fellas. Like, we weren't stupid. Like, Down actually were coming from Division 1 the year before. Like, yeah. We went back to Division 2. They're a good side. And even regardless of who's playing well between Armagh and Down, like, it's a derby game and there's definitely no love lost, you know, on the pitch. And it was always going to be a tight affair, which it turned out to be. Like, you know, it was 2 points in the end. Like, we missed quite a bit. And we played very poorly in the second half. Like, we played as if we didn't know where we were at. And but I suppose there's always a silver lining. Like, it gave us a good kick in the ass, and the fellas regrouped. You know, they worked hard. Like, and we had a good run through the back door. We were lucky in Division 3 with the last goal. But, you know, it's you can't win if you play defensively. You're shit. And if you play attackingly, then, like, you have no.
Yeah, because the talk about Armano this year is that you're playing this offensive brand of football and you're great to watch and everything and you're leaving four forwards up. But that was generally your style of play anyways, for four forwards to stay up. So why has the perception changed this year?
Listen.
Well, you have Jamie Clark back, which makes the forward line tick maybe, and maybe
it's
just...
Always, but like, it's the same when you're with Kildare. Like, we were probably one of the highest scoring teams in the four divisions, and like, you'd still hear that, like, we were a northern team, like, defensive, like, but I just sort of roll with the punches and go, okay, like, you know, what else are you going to say?
Yeah, but everything about you is highlight magnified. Like, I mean, that must add to the
you
pressure.
Help us.
Listen, I've already had it from Jim Gavin. I'm not going to listen to it from you as well. But, like, it is, though, Geezer. And, like, I mean, even when you're with Kildare, the profile of them just raised up and everybody wanted to know about it. But that's just, you, like, your character, and you have to deal with that.
Yeah, I suppose I try and tell the truth most of the time, and it gives people good sound bites, you know, when they take it out of context, and I suppose that just helps it. Like, you try and say what you sort of think without, you know, giving the sort of cliche answers, but sometimes that doesn't always work in my favour.
Well, that's the thing, because you've avoided, this is an exclusive interview, because you've avoided all media this year.
Well, I was suspended, so...
Yeah.
Except from all duties. But so
I'm after working that very well now. Mentioning the suspension, right? I'm glad you brought that up. Because I wasn't going to bring
I have an awful dose of amnesia when it comes to things like that. So
I wasn't going to bring this up, right?
I know you weren't.
But are you going to talk to us about this? Because, like, it was McQuillan's the referee on Sunday. And it was McQuillan. It was the second last league game. He was the linesman, sorry. Yeah. So, like, it's a very bad-tempered game. You're on the sideline, and you're usually kind of relaxed enough on the sideline. So what happened that triggered the incident, and what was said?
It wasn't a bad-tempered game really at all until the last 5 minutes. So, I don't know. He seemed to be happy enough with me at the end of it, and then there was a report went in. And let's just say it would probably differ in what he said and what I said.
Right. So what did he say?
You difference about it. What? Pretty didn't bring him the same question.
So you didn't say what he said, you said. So what did he say you said? You can say it because you didn't say it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I get into enough trouble with them boys, so it's not just rather park it. But 12 weeks compared to what some other stuff was given out, like, it was hard to take. But listen, that's the rules. You just take it in the chin, you shut up and get on with it. Like.
Yeah, and you did shut up. But, like, I'm just trying to get my head around
12 weeks.
Couldn't get a word out of you for the whole year. But, like, I mean, just to get an idea of what was said, though, Geezer, you obviously don't want to say it, but, like, I mean, for 12 weeks, the context of this, because Stevie McDonald was on the podcast, and he said, I'd love if they just publicised what Geezer said, because we need, like, you know, it's either really, really harsh or it's deserved, and nobody really knows. So, like, if it's 12 weeks, people are thinking it's on the...
Take it from me, it wasn't deserved.
It wasn't deserved. No. Okay, so it was a personal
incident. Obviously, that's a very biased opinion, like, but...
Okay, so was his ability as a linesman or a personal thing?
Well, like, if I was having a party, he wouldn't be first on the list now. Not that I have many parties, as you know, Colin, but, like, if it was one, he wouldn't be invited.
Okay, right, we'll leave that at that. But, like, how did you deal with the ban? Because you went to the CHC and you got that hearing and they were having none of it, so you accepted it. You didn't want to go any further.
In fairness, I'd have to admit I got a fair hearing and they did their best to get a fair result, and it just didn't end up that way. I couldn't complain about the hearing I got.
Yeah, because, was it a week or two later, that famous incident of Davy Fitz, like, losing his mind, going in, talking to the referee, ended up in a physical altercation with a Tipperary player. Like, I mean, if that was you, he got 4 weeks less than you for saying something to McQuillan. I'd love to know what it was.
I probably would have got put in Port Leash down beside you. Like, so.
But, like, I mean, you know, when you see Davy getting 8 weeks... Like, it would be easy enough to feel sorry for yourself. Like, I mean, you put a lot into the GAA.
Yeah, but there's rules there. And, like, you know, I don't believe the way it's taken is that, like, the referee's word is sacrosanct, or the linesman, and that's it. There is actually no comeback. I'd love to see the linesman mic'd, and I'd love to see the referees mic'd. That means there's no... But the problem with that is then we'd hear what they actually give the freeze for, so there might be a wee bit of controversy.
But the thing about, obviously, mic and referees is that... Say if you're to lose your mind a little bit, or you're to say whatever, like, that's going to come out on it. You're an amateur player, you go into work the next day, which isn't ideal on players either. You know, I would like them mic'd up. On one side, I would like it, but on another side, I wouldn't like a player coming across like that's not the way he is.
I don't really buy into the amateur thing. Like, that it's, you know, if you want GAA to be taken the same respect of all other sports, like, no, you have to behave accordingly. And there's times, like, I'm not, like, you lose your temper, you say things you shouldn't say, and things like that happen, like, but... You do look for, like, some sort of, you know, across the board, like, you know, you want everybody sort of treated the same, and, you know, like, everybody would sort of tell you, like, you know, it's harder probably in the lower divisions for teams to get the same type of treatment it is for high. But I think that's through, like, new referees come in, get the lower divisions, the ones that are probably sort of higher up, like, have more experience, all that sort of things. But it does need to change. Like, it needs change from top to bottom, but... That's not my call. Like, I tried to actually suggest a few things, and I was told to mind my own business. So,
okay, fair. Now, how did you handle the ban? Because, like, I mean, could you go training? You obviously couldn't be on the sideline. But
sort of time in a court where you don't know what you should say, just in case you incriminate yourself. But I feel a bit like that now, sorry.
Because apparently Davy Fitz dealt with his. That they recorded every training session and sent him the videos.
Sounds like something
that's
what
you did. But even the practicalities of you didn't do a Mourinho coming in the basket or anything like that. But how did you deal with being in the stand, and did you get a different perspective from not being on the sideline? Because, like, I mean,
yeah, like, I would love to see that actually getting a. You know, like, places we tried to do one in Armagh, like, we just couldn't actually get the insurance for, like, one above the stadium. Like, it's a far better place to be, because your position on the sideline, you can actually see frig all. Like, it's the worst position to watch a match.
It is.
And it's definitely the worst position to make decisions from, because everything you see beside you is nearly multiplied by three. Like, so if somebody makes two mistakes beside you...
It's amplified.
Oh, you go, right, he's coming off. He's getting the curly finger. And somebody on the other side might have made five or six. So, you know, you are better, but, like, nowadays you always have people in the stand and you're in your ear and, you know, you have your stats coming back and stuff like that. But I actually found it better. You're able to, I thought, to make better decisions. Like, you weren't actually getting involved in the game as such, if you know what I mean. You were making cooler decisions. But the problem is with the way most stadiums are set up now, you're actually in the middle of the crowd. So you have John Joe Murphy from down the road telling you you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, for what to do with that bye on? Like,
well, that's true. Well, you see where Jim Gavin sits, for example. He doesn't even stand on the line. He's sitting in the first row, and that's even a worse kind of position, you know? So, like, it's tradition.
Your man's got a camera from higher up than he can see.
Yeah. Feeding it down onto an iPad. They are very well off Dublin, aren't they? Getting a live stream onto his phone.
Don't bring money into it now.
But, that's even worse for you. But it's tradition in the GAA to be down on pitch side. And I just can't comprehend. Like, the rugby have a team around them in a box looking down at the pitch.
Yeah, it's the same in the AFL, like when we were doing the Aussie rules as well. Like, you definitely are away from it. You do make clear and better decisions. But there isn't just the facilities there, like in stadiums for it. Like in the semi-final there, I was at it with Mayo and Kerry. My wife's from Kerry, so I have to go to these things. And what do you call it? She told me not to slag them off, but Stephen was up beside me with Donny Buckley, like just a couple of seats down. Like he was up, like sort of watching from there, like for the first half. But you definitely have a far better perspective.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about it.
Talk to us about the story before we get Sean Cavan is coming out now in a minute. The story about getting Jamie Clark back. Is it true that you bumped into each other at the McGregor Alvarez fight in New York, and you went for a coffee the next day, and you sweet talked him, and you got him back, or is that just a lovely little story?
Right, well, like it sounds good. I was going over for the fight, and I've been in contact with Jamie for a good while. When he was away. I would have no issue with any fella looking to travel or do what they want to do. You have to, your heart has to be in it for you to be able to do it right. And he wanted to travel for a year. And he was over there and he kept in contact. And I was telling him I was going over for Conor's fight and went over. We met up, just had a chat. And he said he was interested in coming home. So I said, great.
Yeah, okay, so that was it. Talk to us about McGregor quickly, because when you go over to watch Alvarez, do you get the VIP treatment from your Straight Blast Gym connections? Or?
We were lucky enough to get decent seats this time, but it was due to a friend of mine. He had his own connection, so we were sitting pretty close. Now it was an unbelievable atmosphere now, in Madison Square Garden. It was a good weekend, I have to say.
Yeah.
A good weekend.
What do you think of his antics, McGregor, to sell the fight? It does turn some Irish people off him, as in you can appreciate him as a brilliant MMA fighter, but then the nonsense that goes along with it, Irish people don't seem to be rowing behind him like maybe they should.
You're coming from a good place to be going, but nonsense coming to sell tickets. So you are. I have the utmost respect for Conor. We don't have too many world champions in Ireland, and he's a serious athlete, and I mean he trains really, really hard. And he's the best in the world. He's lifted a sport, he's transcended it itself. And it takes a wee bit of courage to step into a ring any time, but then to step into was one of the all-time greats. Whether people like it or not, I think it takes it takes courage. And we give it a shot. I know, he made a lot of money out of it. But he's a top-class athlete. Whether you like his personality or not, that's what sells tickets in that game. But to me, he's a first-class athlete, and he was a first-class guy when I knew him in Straight Blast Gym, so that's
okay.
A bit much I can say about
Fair enough. That's from the horse's mouth. Right, let's give it up for Sean Cavanagh.
Hi, sir. Still burning me.
Sean Cavanagh is cleaning up since he retired.
I should have retired about five years ago.
RT Radio. He's doing this show tonight and he's running off to do another one after it.
It's all about the love of the GAA.
There's that famous smile. Sean, just quickly, the decision to retire. It's obviously an easy one for you because you did a bit of a Brian O'Driscoll one more year kind of thing, so you knew you were kind of finished after this year.
It finished last year quite poorly for me, the way it ended in the quarterfinal against Mayo. Lee Keegan isn't about there, any chance. I knew I was going to give it one more shot. I felt there was a good side coming in Tyrone, and I still believe that. I know we didn't show it maybe in the semis, but I think there is a nucleus of a real good team coming there in the county. So, I agreed I'd do one more, but that was it. And I had agreed with Mickey way back in November last year that would be it. So it was easy to decide after the Dublin game. We probably knew in that game that Dublin were a fair bit ahead of us, and in the circumstances when you're walking out of the change rooms, I knew then that it was easier this year to walk than it was last year.
Yeah, it was easier, I suppose, after that game as well. Come here, I want to talk to the two of you about the Mayo.
Thanks,
no, that wasn't that. That was not meant like that. That wasn't meant like that. I want to talk to the two of you about the Mayo-Dublin rivalry, right? Because I want to talk about in the context of your rivalry, because you had that big rivalry thrown in Armagh in the early noughties, right up until maybe 2006. And like, it looks to me like Dublin and Mayo clearly kind of have a serious dislike for each other. You know, I think that's fairly obvious, but they're obviously such rivals, that's important. So I want to talk about a few of the games he played against each other. But before that, we'll find out in a minute how you stopped them as a player. We know how you stopped them as a manager. We have a picture of your tactics here.
Was that fended? No? All right.
So that's your secret weapon for Sean Kavanagh. So we did a little bit of investigation to find out what's on that piece of paper. So we found...
He threatened that as a player too.
McKeever's your pit bull on the field, and that's it. Get at Kavanagh in the first minute.
Sean, they were usually at opposite ends of the pitch. So there was a couple of times he's marked each other. Not that many, was there?
Yeah. I think he tried to get me sent off in the semi-final of 05, was it?
Well, actually, from what I remember now, if I can remember correctly, it was Peter started that one, was it? That fight?
No.
That was a different one, was it?
About a different one, yeah.
So many memories.
There's a bit of tension here. They're not even engaging with each other, are they? These are painful memories. Because you would have marked each other, obviously. 2005, you would have marked him. And, Sean's big thing was bursting down the middle. And that's what you were kind of there as centre-back. That's your job to stop that. So you would have been eyeing Sean up. You know, I'm sure that would have been one of your details.
Yeah, at times. But the way Tyrone, you can tell me if I'm wrong here. But Brian played centre-half forward. And Brian was a different type of character from me because he didn't physically engage in the game. He's more of a
slippery
playmaker.
Yeah.
You know, and Brian would have been pulled out to the wings. And if you did go with Brian, the middle was wide open, and if he didn't go at him, he could spray passes. So that's the way sort of Tyrone would have played our centre. But that time, I just can't remember now in that particular game. But we were sort of tit for tat for most of it in that semi-final. And I think we went 2 points ahead, was it?
Yeah, there were three fantastic games, and I think that semi-final in particular, I would probably have it down as the most intense game I've ever played in, because it was the end of a trilogy as such that summer. And
we played each other in the McKenna Cup game, wasn't it, at the beginning of 2005?
Do you bother playing McKenna Cup? I thought you just didn't count that after we kept winning.
There was something like 21,000 turned up to us.
That's right, yeah.
No,
yeah.
That was it. In 2006, yeah. After that year, 20,000 showed up to a McKenna Cup game.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. But did all that familiarity, we know about the Riceys and these kind of trash talkers, but was there a hatred between the two teams? And do you need that hatred, or else it's not a proper rivalry?
I actually felt as if there was a huge respect there, but you were nervous because you knew it was your biggest rival as such you were coming up against, and I think Dublin and Mayo will be something similar. They'll know that if any team is going to take down Dublin, we felt we might have been able to give them a challenge, but it looks as if Mayo is the only team capable of doing it. So I know there'll be that nervous tension between the players, and I suppose familiarity breeds contempt, and after marketing each other a few times, there does get a wee bit of needle between it, but there'll be a respect beneath that all, and after the game and after all this happened, there will be a mutual respect when the guys meet up for international rules or whatnot after that.
Yeah, but I suppose the mutual respect thing is easy to say in hindsight, but at the time, Geezy, you're not thinking of a mutual respect, are you?
You can't play in a contact sport without getting stuck into each other.
Yeah.
And you're always going to get pissed off if you get beat and stuff like that. But at that time, I suppose, we had come probably in the late 90s, and then we had a couple of young players coming in, but maybe in the middle of our team, we were starting to get a wee bit older, where you were probably at the opposite. Peter definitely was getting older, but your main players, yourself and Brian, Philip Jordan, were quite young. We were going probably down there, so we were doing our best to put the brakes on that, but it just wasn't always working. But that particular year, the three games we played now were... Probably we played two against Kerry in 2000, we were up there with it as well. But there were tough games, and you had some great players. And I always find it unusual when I hear about Tyrone at that time that they were very physical, because they weren't. You had more mobility than physicality. We would have felt Kerry were far more physical than Tyrone. Yeah. And it's funny when you hear it on the TV, people going on about the Kerry Tyrone game, the Tyrone were on top of Kerry because they were so physical. We have actually felt the complete opposite.
No, not at all. I can actually remember meeting, I think it was Andy McNulty at one of the Railway Cups, and we never had a collective gym program until 2006 or 7.
Really?
As a county, yeah. And I remember talking to Enda about it, and he was like, you know, how he is getting so... you know, right, powerful or whatnot, but there was no collective. Boys did a wee bit here and there on their own, as they always will, but there was never...
I can categorically state, like, we had a lot of boys, like, I have to laugh at them now to talk about all the gym work we did. They wouldn't know the inside of a gym if I came up and bit them in the ass. And, like, ask them, Clarky, Stevie, and, like,
you talking
Stevie
about yourself? Said, huh? Like,
see, you probably ruined it for everyone with the biceps bulging out of you. But, like, I mean, you were... And at that,
I regret taking it easy on you on Tuesday. You know that.
And actually, at that time, the trick was to get these skin tight jerseys, which, you know, we tried at least. Right. We tried at least, but the belly started showing. So we said,
you had to wash them a few times to get them really tight. So you did.
But your Armaz at that time, Armaz arms looked like huge. But that was that trick just tricks with the jerseys, or were you pumping? But, like, I mean, it did buy into the. Paul Kimmage could be watching here. Okay, just on the Dublin Mayo thing, right? Just because they know each other so well, right? Now, Mayo are a little bit more unpredictable this year with Rochford, you know, trying a few things out. But, like, I mean, ye would have known each other so well that there was no real surprises. You know, you kind of knew what you were getting. So, like, is it difficult not to spend too much time on the opposition because you've got a lot to talk about with them?
I think you spend a bit of time in the opposition, but, like, you know, you have to get your own game plan right, because that's what you've been working on all year. And if you change it completely, like, for opposition, like, you're probably going to come off second best, because they're the best at their game plan. You know, you're going to, at the very best, you're going to be second best at it. So, like, you know, you watch for it, you watch for key players, you know, you watch for patterns, like, a lot of tells, you know, like, every team, like, will have different setups now for kickouts, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, you're looking for those things, but, like, you're not spending a huge amount of time on it.
Yeah. Hey, before we get Graham Geraghty out, I want to talk to you quickly about the 2005 game. And the big turning point in that 2005 game, a lot of people would say, was you getting taken off in the 63rd minute, which psychologically was a huge thing. And a minute or two later, Sean, you burst down the middle where Geezer would have been and clipped over a pint. Armagh were 2 ahead, I think, at the time. Like, that was a huge turning point in that game.
I can only speak for myself, obviously, but I felt it was a mistake from Armagh's point of view at that time. Kieran obviously knew how to stop players, legally or illegally. But I can remember whenever he went off, having a bit of a relief and thinking, yeah, well, finally he's out of my road. I can now go for it a little bit. And the game did open up for me at that point. If you watch the last probably 8 or 9 minutes, I'd maybe 5 or 6 possessions and managed to tag on a point and set up another or whatever. So, yeah, look, I suppose the decision was made at the time. I have to say I was glad to see the back of this man.
It's weird psychologically the lift that can give a team when their spiritual leader gets taken off. Like, I mean, obviously, well, I'll ask you your opinion on it. I wouldn't think you were too happy about it.
No, nobody's ever happy getting taken off. Things have changed.
Did you think you were going all right?
I was doing okay. I was getting on. What was it, 34 that year? Like, so... you know, I was getting on with things, but I was doing okay. But, you know, everybody, you know, like that's the choices people make at that particular time. Like, and, you know, Joe was an excellent manager, and Grimbo as well. Like, you know, they always made good decisions, so whether that one was good or bad.
Yeah.
One of those things.
You're not biting on anything tonight, so you're not. You're definitely...
That would be an Ekimelka matter.
Okay, tell us quickly how we try to get you sent off there, Sean, before we get Graham out.
I remember... you would have thought it'd be no way around. I was interested, you maybe pushed, or did I push you in the chest?
And he took a dive. What?
It was a bit of a roar. I don't know, maybe it was a sniper. Bit of crack.
I'm shocked.
I honestly can't remember these things. Come on, it's 12 years ago.
Get the video.
There's so many of them.
I can't believe it. This is before Tiernan McCann or before Philip Jordan or any of these kind of high-profile cases. You were doing the sniper.
I'm not going to go down that road. Because I probably will win that argument so well.
Listen, give it up for Graham Geraghty. Do you know the gas thing about that, Graham? Is I've no idea if it's Mayo or Dublin booing you.
I don't know whether that's coming from the Mayo people or from the Dublin. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Come here. We were doing the show last year, right? I want to start off with this. And one of my big memories was from 1998 International Rules Trials. I went to trials in 1998 and I made the squad, just in case any of you didn't know. I was only about 20, but look, I don't really like to talk about that kind of stuff. You and Geezer, right? So Geezer was breaking everyone up. I specifically remember thinking, he was wing back on one team, I was wing back on the other team, and I specifically remember saying, do not go up that other side of the field, because he was he was on a rampage. But you
that was
were
the secret of making the team, just stay away from Geezer.
But you were in and around him anyways, and he was roughhouse tactics with you a couple of times, and then you had enough, and the two of you rolling around boxing on the ground. And I was actually thinking at the time, go on, Geraghty, give it to him. Because I was like... But anyways, Geezer was telling us last year that this kind of stuff between you and him was a regular thing, because Armagh played Meath every year in a challenge match and used to kick the shit out of each other.
That was a warm-up before every game, really, yeah. I suppose we used to play each other every year before a championship, maybe on the run-up, you know, to get things warmed up. And I think... the game beyond 5 or 10 minutes and they'd be all skin and hair flying, and then they'd throw the ball in and say, let's try and play with that as well. But it was always a pre-championship warm-up game against Armagh. Definitely it was hot, all right, yeah.
Because do you know that's the gas thing? Because back then, Geezer, you probably would have got that challenge match to go, Meath are a tough team to match ourselves physically against the likes of them, we have to play them in a challenge game. Like, whereas now teams will be getting challenge matches against the Armaghs and the Tyrones to maybe see how they match up physically. So it's kind of turned around that little bit.
Yeah, well, like, I think our manager and Sean as well, Brian and Sean got on pretty well, but they thought football should be played a certain way. And they sort of made sure that game was played in that particular way. I never remember anything really dirty in it, but you just... there was always a couple of flashpoints, and the thing about like Meade's right up the middle, like, you know, you had Darren Fay, you John McDermott, like, you know, you had Graham, you had just fellas like that were fast, you know, and strong and physical, like, and Brian wanted us to get hit before the championship, so when we came to the championship, we wouldn't be crying about it.
Yeah.
And I'd say Sean was probably the same, like, you know.
Who won that fight?
Actually, himself and Reedy probably got into it a wee bit more than me and him, like, a couple of times. There was never any real finishes to them. They were more...
sparring. I was getting ready for the Karate Kid here, mixed martial arts.
Was he into you into the jiu-jitsu back then, or you just keep it standing up? Don't go to the ground.
Yeah, no. Went to the ground, you were in trouble.
I remember doing a training session with the Aussie Rules thing, and we had to do this lap. I don't know if you've ever done it with John O'Keefe, and you started off like, and the group at the front would have to sprint and catch, you know, the thing at the back, so you'd have about 800 meter run, but you had to catch each person in the group. So like, when we did the first group, the next time we caught his, and he went off, but when he came back and was jogging, it was more like a run, so our group ended up running for 40 minutes after him. So we did. We never got to actually finish the second lap.
That was just pure fright. So
you're still playing, are you, Graham?
I was playing up till
last year.
No, up till a few months ago. I did.
43 with Meade now, right?
Yeah. Meade over 40.
Because it was Banty that brought you back when you were 38, right?
Yeah.
And you'd been out of the game for three years. How did that conversation go?
Well, it went well for Banty because he got me back playing, but there's a couple of the selectors left when I come back, so it wasn't. So he gained one and lost two, so it was, yeah.
So how did he sell it to you? You're 38, you're out of the game for 3 years, you're playing a bit of club.
I was playing club.
And this is in June, isn't it?
I was playing decent enough up at a club level, but right. It was only, like, we were an intermediate club at the time, and... He rang me up one day and he's going, you know, hey, you kid, I said, who the fuck is this? and he twisted my arm, yeah, so I went back, and I was only back in a couple of weeks, and we had a challenge match against Galway, and a couple of weeks later then we were straight into the Kildare game, and we came on in the second half and scored a goal, but it was disallowed, so it was
yeah.
No good.
And it was a goal, wasn't it? Yeah. What were you thinking, Geezer? You were with Kildare.
Disallowed.
But you're talking to them about Graham Geraghty being back, are you? Or are you kind of saying, you know, because he is like a talisman and he's back, like this kind of type of player for me that you would have been for Armagh.
Yeah, no, I just can't remember. I remember the goal, all right, and like watching it afterwards and saying we were poxed that it didn't stand, like, you know. But
see, all decisions don't always go against you. You need to remember that, Geezer.
You've never heard me saying that they did.
Listening to Geezer, you think he's the most persecuted fella that you've ever.
You remind me of this fella who just makes these stories up when he's on stage.
No, but what are you saying to the Kildare lads? Do you discuss that he's back or that he could come on? Or, like, yeah, I mean, he's 38. Like, I mean, it was a bit of a very left field decision,
like,
to bring
you
Graham
were
back.
You put in full forward, weren't yeah. you? Yeah, yeah, like, but in full forward.
So
if
you
you're
don't
smart,
have to run in there. Yeah, nice
no. shot. Now you do.
If you're smart, like, for 5 or 10 minutes. But it's a big thing that's coming back into. It used to be there, but maybe 6 or 7 years ago. Players like in the mid 30s were got rid of, like, you know, because they're not fit for this game anymore. But you see now, like, most of the, you know, well, like, maybe up until the Dublin this year, like, but most of the games are being, like, finished in the last 10, 15 minutes. And the biggest thing you need is decision makers on the team at that particular time. And, like, fellas, you make the right decisions. Like, you could have 4 or 5 possessions, key possessions in that last 5, 10 minutes, and one person doing the right thing. Like, you see, even see the training when you see the next score wins. Both teams basically shit themselves, like, and they make 5 or 6 mistakes apiece. So getting fellas on that can make those key decisions is probably the way things are going. But trying to hold on to those players is more and more difficult because you're putting so much in for a lot less.
For like a cameo appearance. See, that's the thing.
But
and
that's where Dublin's going to come up trumps on Sunday. You know, you're dropping in. Yeah, you're dropping in Connolly and Brogan and Flynn and McCauley. They're players of the years. All the stars, they're brilliant players, and they're still in brilliant physical condition, but yet they'll make the right decisions.
The weird thing about Dublin is, and you've all played well into your 30s, you know, and you were still getting your game with your counties well into your 30s. Andy Moran is flying it well into his 30s. In Dublin, and Jim Gavin has to keep refreshing it to keep lads hungry, but you get into your 34, 35 in Dublin and you're gone. Do you know where these lads have loads to offer, but they're just, like, you know, they're not needed. Because Dublin have such a strong squad.
Yeah, I think the intensity now in training even is way up from when we were playing even, or myself and Kieran anyway. But it's like Dublin bench is unbelievable. There's probably 15 players that could get on any county team. But and that's what drives them on. But like the county players now is 30, 31 and 2, they're finished. You know, it's there's a lot.
I still think there's
some lads stay on longer. Like, but it's
one more year, Sean.
I think you might see things change, like in terms of subs going forward. Like, you know, because of the game is moving so quick, and like it would definitely it'll probably suit the stronger teams. Like, but you know, multiple subs like we did have in the Aussie rules or the compromise rules as well. Like, you know, it becomes a more tactical game then.
I think that'd be a great idea.
Let them in and out.
A few weeks ago as well, yeah. And for managers on the line, it would be interesting to see men getting dropped in and pulled out and used for bursts. And yeah, I think it'd make for a much more interesting game.
The traditionalists would have a heart attack. It's hard enough to get any sort of rule. Sean, I want to ask you about this question because you were on a charm offensive with Dublin altogether since you finished.
All the work's in Dublin, isn't
like,
it?
Like, first of all the, you know, the heartfelt hugs with Clucko and all the boys on the field when you were finished. Oh, I'm going to miss you guys, Sean. And then the Dubs are all, yeah, we beat you by 15 points. Goodbye, Sean. That's like...
Stephen's a great hugger.
You said, which I thought was very interesting, we've just come up against probably the greatest GA team I've ever played against. Yeah. Now, that's huge praise considering the Armagh team you played against, considering the Kerry teams that you played against. Like, yeah, do you believe that?
You have to realise, I suppose it'll only be realised afterwards whenever you look back at the history books, and bar one defeat to Donegal in was it 13 or 14, This Dublin team has been all conquering and haven't really been put to their pin of the collar all that many times. I know Mayo last year could and maybe should have got over the line, but they didn't. And, you know, Dublin just seemed to be able to control games. And whenever you come up against them in the flesh, you realise how powerful they are. I have to admit, coming into that game we had in the semi-final, I felt we would beat them. And it's only whenever you come up face-to-face and you see how strong and powerful they are and how they're all... They're playing a real team game, moving the ball through the hands, making the right decisions. You know, they were awesome that day, and I for one come away blown away by how good they were. And if they win on Sunday, I feel they'll be the best Gaelic football team I've ever
Really?
What?
Even from... But like even your team with Canavan, Stephen O'Neill, Muggsy at his best, Brian McGuigan, all them, do you not think like they'd be able to put it up to... I know the different eras
the
are different.
The greatest thing you say about them is that like, I suppose 4 or 5 years ago, it was Brogan, Ger Brennan, O'Carroll, Rory O'Carroll at fullback, McCauley. You know, so and they've been able to make a transition between five or six. Okay, there's been a core of three or four that have remained, but five or six have dropped out and they brought in a new five or six and they're still winning. You know, we won in 03, Mayo pepped us in 04, won in 05, badly beaten in 06, 07. So, you know, the consistency of this Dublin team is unheard of from since I've been watching Gaelic football.
Yeah. What do you think Jim Gavin's biggest strength is, Geezer? Like, I mean, he's able to keep them all hungry. None of them are sure their places, which, like, he's ruthless in that regard, as in, like, it must be difficult when you win in All-Ireland, you'll have a lot of loyalty to the lads that won it for you. But Jim just doesn't really have that. And I don't mean that as a, like, you know, that's a quality of his rather than, you know.
I always believe that good teams, like, make a manager's job easier. Like, if you have people who are competing for places, the reality is for most counties, you're probably going to have, like, you know, 20, 21 players, like, pushing hard for those 15 places. Where, like, the Kerry would be quite similar. I know down in Kerry, like, you know, you have 15, 16, 17 more men coming behind the first 15. Like, you know, fighting like hell to get that jersey because they believe they're just as good as the man starting. And when you have that competitive arena at your training, like, you really are going somewhere. You know, and if you look at the top teams, that's what's happening at the minute. Like, it's not just having those three or four subs that you used to have to make impacts. You have now 15, 20 fellas coming behind, like, that are fighting to get on the bus. Never mind getting on the fighting to get on the 26.
Yeah, that's, you know, the 26.
And
is
like, so when you have that, like, and Jim is that position, and, you know, and Kerry have been aware for a long while too. You know, and in fairness to Tyrone, like, you even say this year, like, you know, you said maybe, you know, 8 or 9 coming in behind that, you know, we're pushing hard for that position. Like, very few counties have that. And I think that's probably, like, Jim's very good at being able to deal. I think Jim's biggest attribute as a manager is being able to deal with the media that surrounds Dublin now. Like, there's nowhere else, even with social media now, compared to when we were playing, like, in the media thing, and people like you in his ear.
He takes the piss out of the media, really, doesn't he? Like, I mean,
he does.
He just does.
Like, but he knows what he's at. Like, he's well-oiled, like, in terms of how he deals with the press, but he has to be. Like, he's in front of the, like, you know, if you take it basically outside of the four rugby teams, like, you know, he'd be the highest sports personality, like, in terms of looking after teams, like, in the country, like,
yeah,
you know, and he has to sort of deal with it, and I think he deals with it very well, because it's okay, like, there's a double-edged sword to Dublin. I love the fact that they take, you know, money and all that doesn't have anything to do with it. God love them, like, but
Dublin fans get very sensitive about this.
I know, but on the other side of that comes dealing with that, and that's a difficult thing too.
Using, like, it right,
but not just using it right, but, like, dealing with the players. You know, like their ego, their, like, their ability to sort of, like, keep them in check, keep their humility down, keep their work rate, their want, their desire. That's probably his biggest attribute. Like.
Yeah. What do you think as a Leinster man, Graham, about the dominance of Dublin? Like, I mean, Leinster, whatever, if they win the All-Ireland this year, they're going to start, they're dominating Ireland. But in Leinster, we're well used to this for a long time now, you know. It's almost like Leinster Championship is a no-go zone. And, you know, not only are they getting better, but the other counties are just getting demoralised every year.
Yeah, it's probably not good for Leinster football in general, but, like, how do you compete with it? You know, like, suppose people say it boils down to money, which was pumped in probably maybe 10 years ago, and it's developed since then. But, like, obviously success breeds success, and when you've Dublin winning Leinster Championship year after year and winning at Ireland's, young people want to play with them. They're probably drawing young players away from soccer, away from rugby as well, and attracted to GA, which is probably a good thing as well. But it's not good for football in general in Leinster, although, you know, Dublin teams, they put the work in, they deserve what they get out of it. But obviously everybody else is playing catch-up, and particularly my own county, they've gone probably slided down the ladder an awful lot in the last 7 or 8 years.
Good. You loved playing the Dubs, Graham, didn't you? Like, you got a kick out of that. That's why I'm pretty sure it's the Dublin. Like, you celebrated at the Hill, and it's a great buzz doing that, you know?
Yeah, and I used to make plenty of money playing in front of the Hill, because they used to throw money at me the whole time. Everyone used to think I was walking with a limp, but it was almost the coins in one sock. But yeah, like playing in front of the hill, like, it's a great atmosphere, and especially like there's always a full house playing against the Dubs, and it kind of brought the best out of most players when they played against them. And you know, the more they jeered you, the better you got nearly, or the more satisfaction you got if you did win.
You know, we shouldn't even, even talking about this, it's almost like talking about the All Blacks. It's like playing Dublin in Croke Park is a great buzz, and it is a great buzz. But, like, I mean, why should we be talking, like, it's a national stadium. It's just, like, the atmosphere, and it's their home ground. You don't get that with any other county. So, like, I mean, it's easy to go to Dublin, or to Croke Park and play Dublin, and be overawed by the whole thing.
Yeah, you know, they have, like, a couple of advantages, but if you look at the history of the GAA, like, traditionally Dublin have always dominated. Like, go back to the 70s, they were winning them for fun. Like, sure, you know, we go back to the 50s, then I think it's the 40s, the 30s. Same with Kerry and Cork and Munster. It's the same with Galway and Mayo and Connacht. Like, traditionally, the bigger counties will always come back full circle. Like, you know, there will be a time that some of the other teams may come up now. Whether the modern era will keep that going a wee bit longer or keep the consistency going, it's hard to tell. Like, but I don't think it's a new phenomenon, Dublin dominating like Leinster in Ireland.
Yeah, no, it's true. And like, you were just taken aback by their physicality, Sean. Were you down on the field against them? Like, the size of them? You were talking stuff about that they don't do full-time jobs, which I wouldn't agree with. Like, I think that a lot of them would have full-time jobs. But you were thinking there must be something that they're doing that we're not, that they're that bit bigger, stronger, and I'm not hinting at anything here, by the way.
I'm not sure where this is going.
They're big, strong, physical men, whereas you're a smaller team, so I don't necessarily think it's gym, maybe.
Okay, no, I suppose it's a combination of an awful lot of things, I suppose. The pure raw pace, and obviously gym is picking players that has that pace and power naturally as well, but... It was just a full package. It is the way they set up, the professionalism of everything they did as players, and you have to be. And you hear the stories about, you know, the money and the food they get and the way they're treated and all, but the players still have to go out and perform. And it was that day against us where you had to sit back and admire the players sticking to a game plan, having the...
Well, what stage did you start sitting back and admiring now after...
Whatever, it's hugging Stephen Thompson.
After 10 minutes.
In around the 5 minute mark, was it?
They're an awesome team, I have to admit.
Yeah.
And, you will. When the dust settles, I think people will sit back and realise that we're watching one of the great teams.
Yeah, come here. Before I let you go, lads, because we're nearly out of time, I want to talk to you about 2006 international rules, because you were all playing, right? And of course, Geraghty gets you all into a big row, which is very, very unlike Geraghty. So the story goes, Geraghty knees a fella in the head in the first game in Galway. So there's a lot of trash talking over and back throughout the week. The game starts, it kicks off. I was at the game, I was in the Cusack stand, and I remember looking down, you were getting really rough treatment. You started into the kind of wrestling. Sean, you were over on the wing, you wanted no part of it.
I was a hospitality dustage. Yeah, it was mad.
That must have been
mad.
An unbelievable experience to be, like, I mean, you're nearly concerned about your safety, that game was getting out of control, no? Or are you just in the zone?
We played in Galway that time, and everybody afterwards was saying it was a real tame affair, and it was the hardest and most physical game I played in all the Aussie rules. They hit so hard, but it was all fair and shouldering and tackles to the ground. But the media went bananas saying that it was, what do you call it, was a real damp squib, there was no hitting in it, and we were in the scene, you know, the next day, like, all of us in bits, like, and oh, nobody could hit, like, and well, somebody ran into me. It was, what do you call the big fellow who was playing full forward?
Barry Hall.
Graham Canty were given the job of trying to double up on him, like, and it was like wrestling a frigging gorilla. he was massive, so he was.
How did that replay end up for you in Croke Park?
It was too wet that day. I didn't want to stay on, so.
And you had your daddy Sean Boylan. Well, that's terrible rough stuff.
I just seen the video. I've never seen Sean Boylan lose in all my life. Your team going up after the game, and this to some of the manager of the Aussie team was. I suppose he was just disappointed his little baby got hurt, you know.
But what's it like in like that, lads? Because they were kicking off, right? Because the minute you ran down to your man, you were getting it. You were getting it verbally and you were getting hit, and then it was kicking off all over the field. So it was very obvious here, this is not kind of like going to be a normal game.
I nearly didn't get on the pitch because there was three of them waiting at the sideline for me. And I went to get on, and he said, you know you're going to get it today, don't you? Whatever. But Paul Gavin just ran out through the middle of the room and get the fuck out of the way.
I don't know if you even understood what he said. He just forced the whole lot out of it. And he says to me, there's a pair of jeans in it for you afterwards. He's like,
it was actually funny because it was Aidan O'Matney and Paul Galvin. It all calmed down a little bit, and then O'Matney and Galvin kicked it all off again. Like, I was thinking, what are these lads doing?
Yeah.
I wouldn't blame them totally now. You know, in fairness, the Dozzies were given a fair bit too. Like.
Yeah, you can't stand down from that kind of thing. But I think, you ended up wrestling with Barry Hall then, did you?
No, I was the captain, so it was. He was. We had a chat, and and I remember O'Mahony was one side of me and Gavin was the other, like, and the next thing the three of us were sitting beside each other on the sideline. It's the only game I've ever got sent off. And
so is it?
Yeah. I wish I got sent off.
That was his first step into the management role, you know, sitting on the sideline having a look and see.
But no, it was, you know, the thing was out of hand at that sort of stage. Like, they didn't see anything wrong because there was no further punishment, like, in their own sport.
That's it, and yeah.
Like, even, like, the game, like, you know, everybody used to talk about, like, oh, like, it was terrible that we couldn't beat them with a round ball. But we were playing Aussie rules with a round ball. Like, at the start, like, those games, we played all Aussie rules. Like, it was four bounces, you know, it was the wide thing, the tackle, which is totally alien to us. So people might think the opposite, but we don't engage in the tackle. We stand off where their whole thing is, and we're at our safest when we're shooting. If you shoot or take a pass and somebody, what do you call it, hits you or pulls you to the ground, it's obviously a free kick. Where it's at that stage in Australian rules, that's where you're at your most vulnerable, and that's when they go for you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like, we were missing shots, and people were sort of saying, like, you know, oh, like, or like, you know, Ireland, like, they're terrible, like, they should be better with a round ball. But when the rules were balanced, and it became more GA rather than just Aussie rules with a round ball, like, you know, I think it sort of showed that, like, you know, we can live with them, like, no problem, like, in terms of fitness or strength. But, you know, it'd be the same. Like, if you played, you know, Australian rugby, and we decided to play with a round ball, let you kick it, like, that doesn't mean you're going to be able to beat them. Like.
Yeah, no, that's true. What do you remember of that incident, Graham? Because, like, I mean, you were knocked out and brought to hospital, so, like, I mean...
I seen it on TV about 3 weeks later. The most frightening thing about that was waking up in the back of an ambulance. I was looking out at Mocky Regan looking in at me. All right. But not a whole lot. I just remember the tackle, and then...
That was history. Did it turn you off it then? Like, would it kind of sicken you towards it?
Not really, no. Like, it's like we all love playing it because it's, you know, it's aggressive, it's physical. But I think they took it over the top that time, you know. Is there any Australians here? No. Yeah. But, like, most Australian sports people, they take it very serious.
They're assholes, aren't they, in general?
They take it very serious. And then when they're... You know, when they're beaten,
they want to
their egos
them.
Get hurt, and then the physicality comes in then. But they were engaging in stuff off the ball and after the tackle and on the ground, which was totally illegal. But I looked at a clip of it there the other day, and it's horrible. The referee's standing there looking at you, like, and you're getting the head bed off you, and he's standing there like, David Coldrick from Meath, like, was... And
I'm not allowed to talk about referees, so...
Always penalised the third player, so I just had to let you get your head bit off.
Yeah.
You were over on the sideline, I remember seeing you.
He was told to hug the sideline by Sean Boyle. So he was over there.
Listen, lads, you've been brilliant. We've gone over the 8 o'clock slot. We'll be back next on the Sports Show Facebook page. So you can continue on watching the show if you go over there. Please give it up for Geezer, Sean Kavanagh and Greg Garrity. Welcome back to the Academy! Yeah. All right. Hello to our Facebook Live Sports Show, Facebook Live viewers. Right, we'll get our next panel out. Please give it up for Lee McHale, Ray Cosgrove and Paul Clark.
Colm, how are you?
How are you getting on, Lee?
Good to see you.
Liam just told me he's been drinking all day to go easy on him, so... It's Monday you're supposed to drown the sorrows, Liam, not on...
Well, you can't leave a country lad in Dublin for the day. He only knows what one thing to do, go for a few beers, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. There's nothing else to do in Dublin, the capital city. I want to start off with the two Dubs lads, because we started off the show trying to identify this man. You're two Dublin men. Who is the man with the camcorder recording Eamon Fitzmaurice? Do you recognise that man?
No, not calm over, definitely not.
No idea.
Clarky, your Dublin kind of backroom team, you're in that circle. Do you know this man?
Unless he's someone from NAMA or something like that, you know, he's leading.
What, honestly, lads, because you've all been involved in management. You this year, you've been with Wicklow, and you've obviously managed Dublin in the Burn Cup this year, Clarkie and everything. What would the benefit of doing that be? Like, I'm trying to even get my head around it, because he recorded Fitzmaurice for a full game. From a managerial point of view, like, to the three of you, where would that be coming from?
Is he a Kerry guy that's just recording their behaviour on the sideline, or what? I don't know. Or is he looking at the half forward line of?
Well, no, he was recording Fitzmaurice. I have that on good authority. And
you should ask that authority then.
If you want, but I think this is really interesting, and it's not just a Dublin thing. I'm just wondering, from a managerial point of view, if he wanted to record the Kerry management, how did he get the seat right behind them? Do you know, and like, how did this all come about, and why did he do it, really, is the question I'd like to know, if it was part of the Tyrone or Dublin management setups, Liam?
Time and substitutions, maybe, you know, watching how they interact with each other, all that kind of stuff. It's hard to know, isn't it, really, but
yeah,
that's the only thing, really, like, what changes to make, substitutions, you know, get the timings right, and maybe, you know, when you see that pan out, then maybe you can say, well, we can put Cullum on at this stage to counteract that, and because there is, I'd say, with the exception of Dublin, there is a kind of a hierarchy of about 21, 22 players that, you know, say for example, Mayo will play pretty much. Everybody here will know the 15 that Mayo are going to play, bar maybe one or two, and then the subs that will come in. Conor Loftus will come in if he doesn't start. Young Cohen will come in. Probably Young Drake will come in. And you kind of know with most teams who's going to come off the bench. But with Dublin, you don't know that. So maybe that's what they were trying to do. I don't know.
Yeah. We'll get into the team selections in a minute. Because all three of you are in management, lads, and you all played in a different era. Like, Ray, like, I mean, what different kind of world is it now? Like, I know there's all different software, there's WhatsApp groups, there's all different, like, I mean, it's a totally different landscape to where it was.
Yeah, well, I first came on the scene back in 96 with Clarkie. So I played under four different managers, and the game has evolved so much. You know, even if you look at the current crop of players, they've gone, like, I finished them in 2008, and they've gone to a different level. You know, it's like it's meticulous, the preparation, the food, the strength and conditioning. You know, it's gone to another level, really. You know, I thought we were bad. We were probably going 5 days a week, and that was near as professional as you could get. But these guys are... You know, even the resources that they have, the goalkeeping coaches, the psychologists, the nutrition, gone to another level.
Yeah. So, like, Jim Gavin has a huge backroom team, Clarkie. So, like, he has to manage them on top of managing 30 players and, you know, on top of keeping a day job. Like, I do think at the top level of intercounty management, it nearly, like, it has to be professional.
I don't know whether these good managers manage their group, you know, like... He sets them tasks and they do their job and they come back with results.
Yeah, but he has to analyse the results.
Whether it's fitness tests or what programme they have for the next week or this dietary or something like that, and he trusts them to do their job. If he doesn't think it suits what someone else is doing, he'll ask them to maybe tinker with it, but I don't think he oversees the whole thing. That's what it's all about in management, is actually trusting people, giving them a task and them getting it done in the manner that he wants it done.
Yeah, you warmed up for your taking over from Jim Gavin in the Burn Cup and you won it there, so...
No, definitely not.
Are you no interest in taking a step up? Really?
No.
Why?
I suppose, you know, I had a good career, probably lost more good big games than I actually won. I thoroughly enjoyed my 4 years with Pillar. And what we achieved then and what we didn't achieve, probably a few regrets. You also then see the other side, but when you step away from that management group and a new manager comes in and you had given your all to a group of players, you're soon forgotten. Yeah. And then they look at the next manager and try to impress him and do what they got to do, you know?
Yeah.
And then I'm given an opportunity when Jim got, you know, if it was any of my 95 team rang me and my phone lit up and it said 95, you know, Jim Gavin or Desi Farrell, I'm going to answer straight away because we have a bond. So if Jim Gavin rings you, there's somewhere in the back of your mind going, maybe stuck for a half hour or something, you know. and it's funny because Tomás O'Shea said, you know, in Tomás's best voice, you know, like a year after his retirement, you know, he was still hoping for that phone call. 20 years after that, I'm still hoping for that phone call. So believe you me. But I seen the group of players and what was, you know, what was sort of handed to me and how I could manage. And I had no management to do with that period of time for the Auburn Cup. It was very easily done. Group of players who had come through minor under 21 ranks, who were actually had played really good club football in 2016. A lot of them got onto the Dublin Blue Stars setup, and they were handed to me. So they were very easy to deal with.
Yeah,
and great side.
We've talked a lot about Dublin so far tonight, so let's talk a little bit about Mayo, Liam. And like in my eyes, Mayo are in a much better place this year than they were coming into the final last year. I know they had that element of surprise, but there's an awful lot more of their forwards playing well. They've a little bit. You don't really know how they're going to pick their team. That element of surprise this year, where Jim's not sure of a few players where they're going to play. So, like, Mayo are in a very good place.
For sure. Massive challenge, and I think everybody from Mayo knows that. This Dublin team, Sean and Kieran and Graham were talking about, it is a special team. And they've dominated everybody except Mayo.
Yeah.
You know, they've won two All-Irelands against Mayo and did not play well, and Mayo can put pressure on Stephen Clarkson's kickouts, put pressure on their on Dublin's backs, get under their skin and make them edgy. That's just going on what we've seen in the past, and they're a little bit better now under Stephen Rothford. They're kicking the ball a little bit better, lads. Their entry pass is a little bit better. That's why you see the likes of Andy Moore at 33, 34 years old playing so well.
And he's getting it this year a lot closer to goal. They're good diagonal balls where he's not breaking to the wing all the time this year.
They're not carrying the ball as much. They're not taking it into the tackle as much, which gives them more energy to be really aggressive and real edgy in the tackle. And it's been an amazing 2 years for Stephen Rochford. Like, you get beaten by Galway in the first round and you must be in the doldrums, really, and all of a sudden then they just kind of, third gear through the league or through the next few games, and then when it gets to Croke Park, they just explode. And they were very unlucky last year, lads, to lose to Dublin. That first game could have went anyway, and I think it's, and I know most people would agree, but I think it's going to be a massive game on Sunday. The only thing that concerns me is 15 minutes to go. I think Mayo need to be 3 or 4 points up. Because Dublin start...
I've heard that a lot, Liam, right? And in the drawn game last year, Mayo were 3 points down with 3 or 4 minutes to go, and they pulled it out of fire. So, you know, I know logically with Dublin's bench, people think that. But, like, I mean, these are such close rivals. Like, last year, that didn't go like that. Mayo were the ones able to come back in the last few minutes. Yeah. But if you keep saying that, suddenly the Mayo players will be in their head, shit, the bench is coming. Do you know that kind of way?
You still have to get those matchups right. And the boys, the previous panel were talking about it. You're still bringing on Player of the Year. You're still bringing on guys that have 4 All-Ireland medals.
Yeah.
You're bringing on experience. So I think Jim Galvin got a big scare last year from Mayo. And he's been very, very clever throughout the league and throughout the championship in the fact that he's left Brogan and Paul Flynn. And well, Jeremy now is a different kettle of fish, Kevin McMenum. He's left Michael Darren McCauley. He's left quality players, experienced players on the bench. And that has to be a huge advantage, because you can take off young O'Callaghan, you can take off young Mannion, you can take off young Scully if they start and bring on these quality players. That's why I think Mayo can be in that position with 10 minutes to go, but I think they need to be in that position with 10 minutes to go to win the game because of the quality that Jim Galvin has to bring on.
Mentioning Dear McConnelly, because we're talking to Geezer there and Sean Kavanagh, and Geezer's brought off with 7 minutes to go, and Sean saying what a psychological boost that gave Tyrone. And, like, is not starting Dear McConnelly, if he potentially doesn't start, it's not looking like he is that giving Mayo a huge boost, Clarkie, that, you know, Dublin don't necessarily have to give it to them?
Like, again, everybody says, and the betting says, there's no way he's starting. But, you know, whatever Jim Gavin decides is the right decision. That's the way I look at it. He's done very little wrong over the years that he's been there, with substitutions and changes and when he makes them, you know. So, you know, to bring him on when he did, like, you know, a couple of minutes to go, bring him on, people thought that was just silly and farcical. But in hindsight, you look at it and you think, well, he did that. It's out of the way. He started. He's come on in a game, and that's
but
done and
if
dusted.
If you wanted to start him, he'd want to give him a bit more into the legs than three or 4 minutes, you know? Like, I mean, that there's not really any logic to that.
Well, it depends. You know, he says to Dermot Connolly, you know, before the semi-final, or he says it before the final, what am I going to get out of you? What are you going to give me? Well, if I don't start you, what am I going to get out of you? He's going to ask him that question. He's going to actually say face-to-face and look him in the eye and probably say, well, what am I going to get out of you? And if Dermot gives him the right answer in the right manner, well, he'll let him loose. Like, I'm probably thinking that he may start him. He may not start Mame in the programme, and he may start him. You know?
I think he could. I think if Dermot Connolly starts full forward, Mayo are at sixes and sevens. What do we do with this man at full forward?
Liam was saying about Mayo. I think Mayo have improved a huge amount. And I think they're playing a more expansive style of football. You look at Higgins and you look at Keegan and you look at Boyle and you look at Donny Vaughan, all coming up the pitch and scoring and creating scores and causing havoc. You know, how are you going to stop them doing that? Well, you're going to put in your most dangerous players from the start of the game and try and tie them down if they can, you know?
Yeah.
You know, look at Mayo against Kerry. When Kerry had three shots in the space of 15 seconds and it was three unbelievable blocks by Clark and by Boyle. Now, whether it hit his arse or his head, it didn't make a difference. They were willing to put their body on the line.
Yeah.
And that could have been a turning point in that game. But for me, it was a turning point in Mayo's season and their development. I went, shit, these are serious about this year, you know? So I think they're vastly improved. But that gap, that whether it's a 1 or 2 point gap or it's a big gap as in the overall group of players starting and finishing in the panel, I think Dublin have improved as well. So, you know, it'll come down to probably, you know, is it going to come down to the 15 minutes? I don't know. I don't know. It depends how it goes to half time and if big substitutions are made. And if Dermot doesn't start and a Dublin forward gets a black card, who's your first sub on?
Eric Clowns.
You know, yeah, the Clowns, yeah. And here, I'm not a bad guy to bring on. But
you could bring on Eric Clowns first, get the boost out of that, and then bring on Connolly again. Yeah.
But, like, you're right. It, you don't know. You don't know what the backup is, you know, what the plan is, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I have to say, I was saying earlier on in AIB Bank Centre that us Culshies love that Hill 16 cheering the wrong man. We really, really... Oh, it was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic.
It was Rory's story. It was right in the middle of it. Kind of Budweiser. Go on, damn old.
Because it's the...
I was looking around saying, geez, I didn't think I was this popular, you know.
No, I'd say you didn't know what to
what's
do.
What's going on here?
But it's because, like, the stereotypical Hill 16 fan is down watching Man United in the pub. He's having 5 or 6 points. He's up to the match 15 minutes late, and he's going on, go on, Wheelo, and Wheelo's retired for... Now...
That was a Liverpool supporter saying, Ronnie Whelan. It's a different thing altogether.
But that's the thing. I've watched Dublin matches on Hill 16, and those type of fellas are on Hill 16, but there's an awful lot of old stock, like lads from clubs that went there with their father, you know, so it's unfair to stereotype them all, but there is a really weird mix on Hill 16.
You know, I've gone to the Hill the last number of years, and I go in with a group... older guys from Finglas, and are mad Erden's Oil, and their passion, like, you know, they're in for the minor game. They're there from the start, and they don't move from that barrier.
Yeah.
And a couple of people from North County Dublin, from Ballybuckle, and just the buzz and the atmosphere
amongst them.
And there's a nervousness, and they all sweet after, and they're going like this, and they're sitting down, and they're sweating, and... Do you take your tablets before the game? You know, and they're asking, and I'm thinking, God, do I remember me CPR? If this fella hits the deck, am I doing this? You know, pumping away in them. But there's a great buzz about it. You know.
Yeah.
And you know, it's stereotypical. It's a good bit of character and a bit of crack about it. You know.
So. No, there's no doubt about that. Talk to me, right? So we'll say Dermot Connolly doesn't start. Where do Mayo play Lee Keegan then? Do they put him on Kilkenny, or do they play him centre forward? And if they played Keegan centre forward, they might play Aidan O'Shea full forward and get Keegan to drag Keane O'Sullivan out of there and, you know, have one-on-one. So there's a whole lot of different permutations about where everybody can play.
I don't see Lee Keegan starting centre forward. You know, I'd imagine Aidan O'Shea is going to start centre forward. Like Lee's played all his football at wing back or even centre back. Colin Boyle might go into centre back. I cannot see, you know, anything different than that, Woolley. You know, there is a likelihood that Paul Flynn might start. If Flinner gets in ahead of Niall, you know, you probably see Colin Boyle and Flinner lock horns like they have over the last couple of years. You know, I don't see Stephen doing anything too radical, as radical as he did in the Kerry game, dropping Aidan into fullback.
Yeah,
I'd imagine he'll play wing back.
He'll play wing? See, then he'll probably, if Dermot doesn't start, then Lee Keegan will probably pick up Kilkenny. And that's messing with Kilkenny's game, because Keegan have Kilkenny's heart broken, and Dermot Connolly selflessly does that job. So Connolly not starting actually has a huge bearing on the matchups and on the game.
Well, he hasn't played in 12 weeks, and Clarkie, I differ with you. If Jim had intentions of starting Dermot on Sunday, I think he would have given him more game time than the 2 minutes he brought him on the last day. So
it was a black card. Was a risk.
Yeah,
it was a black card. Was a risk. Yeah. You know. You're playing Tyrone, and you know they're, you know, I'm not saying, you know, a fella could have been finishing up that day and he could have done a bit of a care on Donaghy and done something stupid, you know.
Yeah.
But you know he couldn't run that risk that if Dermot got a black card and was gone, you know. But he would have looked in his eyes and known what he was going to get out of it, you know. Dermot didn't get heavily involved in the game when he did come on. Regarding the matchups, like, you know, if you put Lee Keegan on Kieran Kilkenny, there's a big match-up on Paul Mannion. Paul Mannion is having a great season as well and scoring very, very well. And there's a Conor Callaghan again.
It.
So there's a lot of speed.
He can play Lee Keegan midfield on McCarthy and bring in Paddy Durkin.
As well, yeah.
And that makes them smaller but more athletic.
There's an awful lot of things can happen here. And I think Rochford will not go with the way we think he'll go. I don't think he'll go with Aidan O'Shea centre-forward and Lee Keegan centre-back.
Aidan O'Shea at full-back, but he also dropped his best goalkeeper last year and probably lost in All-Ireland as a result of it. So, you know, he's not...
Can I ask your opinion on that, lads? Because in hindsight, he got slated for that. But if you were to ask me before that game... About Rochford's bringing Henley in for Clark, because Clark lost his mind a little bit towards the end of the first game, and Henley is known for good kickouts. So before the game, I would have said that change makes sense. Whereas Henley makes the balls of the, you know,
in the drawn game.
Yeah, but like before the game, that's hindsight. That was ridiculous. Yeah. I didn't think it was as ridiculous.
But Colm, I was talking to Clarkie after the game. There was 6 or 7 minutes extra time, and two of his bad kickouts were in extra time, and he didn't know there was 6 or 7 minutes. On his first kick out, he didn't realise. He thought there was only 2 or 3 minutes left. So he rushed the first one. It kind of hit Dermot Connolly, wasn't it, on the back.
Yes.
So two of those came when it went into 71, 72, 73 minutes, in fairness to him. Now, I know he's a club mate of mine and all that. So he'd a very solid game up to that. And I think it's very unfair now to criticise him for those... Two bad kickups at the end.
No, but I'm not criticising him, but I can kind of see where Rochford would have been thinking with that change. You know, whereas before the game, you wouldn't have said it was as ridiculous as what you would say. Like, Rochford's not to know what would have transpired, you know.
Well, he was the All-Star goalie before, you know, at that stage. I thought it was a pretty crazy decision, in all honesty. I know they're talking about the trajectory of Rob Henley's kickouts. I thought it was a very, very poor decision.
Yeah, well, we can all agree on it now. But I would say
Yeah. But like,
the talk of me was unbelievable. My niece, her two brothers are here, could tell me on Friday that Clarkie was dropped because she's friends with his sister. And like, I was there. You've got to be kidding me, Colm. We could not believe it.
Right.
In Mayo that he was dropped because we all know that his kickouts are a little bit too high.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's long ones. He's really, really worked hard on it. He's an unbelievable work ethic, but he's solid. He is a solid keeper, probably the best or second best keeper in the country.
Well, he's a great shot blocker.
He's like Schmeichel.
Yeah, he's dominating.
The way he spreads himself and stuff like that. And he actually pulled off two brilliant saves in the first half of the drawing game against Young Fenton.
Yeah, Brian,
So we could not believe it. Like, we were shocked. We said, this can't be right. Even up to the throw-in, we were there like...
But the word was that it was the O'Shea's were calling the shots.
Yeah.
But again, hang on. That's from my source. Well, that was the word.
Yeah, but you see, now I'm glad you said that, Clarky, because you like to float a few bits out there, you know. You like to.
A bit like Clark's kickouts.
Paul, that's very understandable as well, because I played midfield for Mio now, and I'd much prefer my keeper,
yes,
my club keeper playing in goal
because you know his routine for kickouts.
You probably grew up with your so like. You know, Aidan O'Shea gets a lot of bad press. And you talked about Jim Gavin talking to Jim O'Connolly. So imagine now if Stephen Rochford said to Aidan O'Shea, who would you prefer in goal? Just a simple question after a practice.
Yeah.
I'd be sure he'd say, I'd prefer...
In a perfect world, yes, probably.
So it could happen like that.
Yeah.
And that.
But there's nothing wrong with that, though, lads. The manager picking the player's brain.
Yeah, there's nothing. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you're asked that question, I'd say if you asked it, Clarke is a great keeper. David Clarke is a great keeper, and you know there's no question about that. But I'm sure Aidan O'Shea or Seamus O'Shea would say I'd prefer to play with.
Yeah. Yeah.
With my man, you know, so maybe that was the way it came
maybe
out.
It was. Like, you'd like to give Rochford a bit more credit, you know, than to think that he's going with what one or two players said. Like, he is a very good manager.
I'm not playing if you don't play.
Come on. Like, who are you trying to act like? Martin Brettany? I wanted to talk to you, Clarky, because the big narrative before the replay last year was the Dublin media campaign against Lee Keegan, right? And it... It started the hashtag Things Lee Did, which we all really enjoyed. But here's Paul Clark in the Irish Independent. I hate that battle. I don't see footballer versus footballer there. I actually think Lee is conceding his football ability by pulling and dragging rather than pitching himself against him as a footballer.
Okay.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. So... You're very close to Jim Gavin. You're floating this out on the 27th of September before the replay on the 31st. At what time of the day did Jim ring you to tell you to do that?
Well, I'll take credit for Lee getting a goal early on in that game because he played an expansive game and wasn't pulling Dermot over. So, you know, like... You know, when you're asked the question, like, you know, here is a football change, you know. But, you know, back in the day, and Graham would say it was 15 v 15, you squared up against the fella, you either hit him before he hit you, and if he hit you first, if you shied away from it, he knew you had you in the pocket. That's the way it was played back in the 80s and 90s, you know. So, you know, it is a battle. You know, you have these zonal defences. I don't like this zonal defence and areas for kickouts and into space. So when there's play going on and you're looking at two brilliant footballers and it's pulling and dragging and off the ball stuff, because when you're in the stand or on the hill, you can see it all going on. You tend to watch that, not because you want it, because it's there right in front of you. And Dublin players do it too. That's what's expected of them, to keep good players quiet. And when I was asked about it, I said, you know, if Lee Keegan played football, it'd be better for Mayo, and I would fear it more so for Dublin. Yeah. After the All-Ireland final, he went on and played for his club, and he was unbelievable. Did he go on and win a club All-Ireland? Yeah. On the back of him playing good football.
But there, you understand that there's two of them in it, because Lee Keegan is as much of a threat going forward, arguably, as Connolly. So
would you quote me again there, and what does it say? Only, you know, if he plays
Lee
football...
Lee is conceding his footballing ability by pulling and dragging.
Yes.
But what about Dear McConnelly conceding his football ability by pulling and dragging Lee Keegan?
Well, I think, is it easier for a defender or a forward to concede what, you know?
Listen, I don't really blame you for it. You're a dub and you're floating that out there. And like Alan Brogan floated
it. I don't blame you for being a dub or floating. Which part? Because I don't think you're saying two of them.
Chair Brennan said it in the media. Ciarán Whelan drew attention to it on the Sunday game. Alan Brogan mentioned it. You obviously mentioned it. So it became a thing then, you know? And
yeah.
That's just the reality of it. Whereas
that's
Liam...
That's a bad matchup for Mio.
It's a bad matchup because you've got the likes of David Brady, the bird brain, and what's he going to do?
You don't know what DB is going to do, that's for sure. But That's you. Lee Keegan is a hugely influential player for Mayo, and you want to. you want Lee Keegan playing the game. I'd agree with Paul completely. So to try and stop the likes of Jerry McConnelly, which is not easy, you put a lesser ball player on a guy like that. And I didn't like that matchup at all last year. I thought it was... Yeah. I agree with Paul, as I said already, 100%. It suited Dublin way more than it suited Mayo. You need to... I'm not going to name any guy, but the last fellow I...
Jim Gavin ring you to say that?
The last guy I would put on Jeremy Connolly is Lee Keegan, because Lee Keegan is probably the best attacking wing-back maybe in the country. Now, Jack is a great lad as well, but he's as good now as you get. And, you know, outside of the goal, he didn't do a lot offensively. He scores and he creates overlaps. He has two or three assists a game, so that's not a good matchup. So, you know, I would put it maybe a Donald Vaughan or somebody like that on Jeremy Connolly, because he has that physical size and he doesn't contribute as much to the Mayo attack as Lee Keegan would do. So it's not a good matchup. And if Jeremy Connolly starts, I would much prefer if Lee Keegan was kept away from him.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough, lads. We're going to finish up with predictions, but before we get to your predictions, we went around the country asking some very special guests what they thought about the match first.
Well, folks, got a lot of texts and emails in about this one. The All-Ireland football final. Who's going to win, Dublin or Mayo? Let's go find out.
If Mayo can win the All-Ireland final on Sunday, I'm personally inviting Lee Keegan to a special gathering up in my Mayoras.
I'm really looking forward to a huge game. You know, very excited, as you can probably tell. I'm fucking buzzing for it.
Well, I think, you know, for Mayo to win, they're going to have to, you know, say a few prayers to St. Anthony, you know, to find themselves a bit of luck, you know.
A joke.
And I think also they may as well, you know, say a few prayers to St. Jude as well, because he's the patron saint of hopeless cases. They're fucked.
To be honest, no, I have no notion about matching yet. I'll probably sit around the house now like Hanslow and I'll watch Exposé for the day or something like that.
Ain't no shades of boom. They're all booms. Philly McMahon's going to eat him up. Trust me on that. So, first half TKO to the Dubs.
Football was a better game when there was cow shit in the field, right?
Sure.
I have no interest watching it, right? If it was in the back garden, I'd pull the curtains. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm really excited for it, but I just don't know what to wear. Will I wear this? Or will I wear this?
Oh, I don't know.
Just don't know. I'm not going to go.
Well, I'm really looking forward to a fantastic day. I really do. I have a warm, fuzzy feeling in my body that Mayo are going to do it this year, yes.
Or it could be the sunbeds.
It could well be, yes.
You know, I can see into the fucking future. I think Mayo are going to win this thing. I really do. And I think Killian and O'Connor's going to be man of the match. To that I say amen. To that I say all right.
Look, as a Mead man who spends a lot of time in Dublin, I have to say, I hope Mayo beat the shit out of them. Absolutely.
This championship has been a total disaster. It really has. So bad. We got to build a wall. We really do. Split Dublin in two. We got to make this championship fair again. Okay?
This Jim Gavin guy is a right? He's a disgrace to the game.
I mean, you can't say that.
He will not win on Sunday if he doesn't play Wes Hoolan at centre forward. No way.
You know, Mayo had the chances, you know. Had the chances last year at Croke Park. Didn't take it. So listen to... Whose drone is that? Who's drawn is it? That's the second time he's flown past.
Well, now, you know, I'm looking forward to a really great game. You know, hang on. Is this for RTE?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
You, Peter, forgive me.
Oh, you do love me, Gowdy. Be able to wobble them while you lose.
I'm joined here by the great Jim Gavin. Jim, you must be really excited about the game on Sunday.
Yeah, Wooly. Yeah, I'm very excited for the game Sunday.
Brilliant stuff there, Jim. Really interesting. And come here, will Dermot Connolly start?
Yeah, look, we're really excited now for the game.
But will he start, Jim?
Go suck a lemon.
You're a boring bastard, you know that? And you're... I'm never interviewing him again. That... I'm gone. I'm out of here.
All right. That's a tough act to follow, lads, but we'll get your predictions. Pretty short predictions now because we're running over time. But, like, I mean, Mayo are +3 in the handicap. Dublin are 2-5 to win. Mayo 3-1. Clarkie, we'll start with you. How do you think it's going to finish up?
Dublin win. And you know, I think if they click, you know, we said the last number of years, the game's been very, very close. Mayo have pushed Dublin all the way. I don't think Dublin have performed as well as they would like in an All-Ireland final. And I'm hoping that they'll do it on Sunday. And if they do it, they could win by 4 or 5, maybe 6 points.
Okay.
7, 8, 9.
Cozzy.
Wooly, I think -2 or -3, is it?
It's -3.
I think it's buying money, to be honest.
Dublin, yeah, -3. Yeah. But there's only been a point between them in 5 of the last 6 games.
Mayo haven't beaten Dublin in the last 10 league or championship games. I do believe Dublin have got a lot better this year than last year. I think Mayo have improved. They've stumbled through the championship. I know they've 9 games under their belt. Dublin are fresher this year. You know, they've brought Conn into the team. Paul Mannion is a completely new pair. James McCarthy inside in midfield. Defensively, they're very, very strong. We talked about the bench earlier on. You know, the experience coming off that bench in the last 10 or 15 minutes, Liam, I think that's going to be priceless. You know, Mayo are going to introduce, you know, young guys that haven't, you know, tasted that type of environment before. You know, the likes of Bern O'Flynner, Michael Dara, Owen O'Gara. I just can't see enough, like, Kevin McLaughlin, Dermot O'Connor, they haven't scored enough all year. If Aidan O'Shea doesn't perform, you know, Killian O'Connor and Andy Moran have carried them through the championship all year, and I think Johnny Cooper, Philly will get their matchups right. I can only see a Dublin win.
Okay. Liam, the last word to you, a little bit shorter than Cozzy there.
Mayo are going to be up by 3 points with 10 minutes to go. The 3 in a row and the whole pressure of everything is going to come down on top of Dublin, and Mayo are going to win by a point.
Mayo fans are, aren't they? Absolute lunatics. Right, listen, that's all we have time for on our Facebook Live. We're going to do a little bit more here. Thanks very much for watching, and we'll talk to you on the podcast on Monday. Good luck. All right, time for our quiz. And you want to know the teams of the quiz. It's Dublin plus Sean Kavanagh, who loves Dublin. And it's Mayo, captained by Liam McHale, and the rest of Ireland. So there's no way, no real way of linking these three together in any way, right? Okay, so team one is the Dubs, team two is the rest of Ireland. So question one, this is round one, and it is how many All-Stars does he have round? So question one to team one, how many All-Stars does Ja Fallon have?
I said two. He won in 95. He got one in 95. I'll go two.
Two, was it?
Yeah. Two. We're going
to go two. Two is correct. Yeah. If anyone shouts out the answer, you've seen me at jiu-jitsu, and listen, I'm not afraid to go down there. Vian Geezer. Right, so Dublin won. Okay, question one for team two. How many All-Stars does Mickey Linden have?
Kieran,
you get two,
was
it?
91.
Two.
One. I couldn't believe it when I read it. Yeah. Mickey Linden only has one All-Star. Now, these are Wikipedia stats, so... He didn't get one in 91. The All-Star forward line in 91 was Flynn, O'Rourke and Stafford. Yeah. All Meade. Right.
Good full forward line, though, now, in fairness.
It is a good full forward line. Right. So, question two to team one. How many All-Stars does Colin Boyle have?
Boyle. He started maybe three.
Going to go with three.
Three, yeah. Very good. Very good. Oh. Thought that was a difficult one. They're good at this. All right, question two to team two, the rest of Ireland. How many All-Stars does Kieran Kilkenny have?
Wasn't there for the first one, was
No.
The first one?
No. I don't. No,
how can we get the hard questions?
Well, no, they're equal. They're equal.
Is there any basketball questions? No.
There's only two.
Two. Okay, two. Colin's keeping the scores there. So two for Dublin, one for the rest of Ireland. Question three for team one. How many All-Stars does Graham Geraghty have?
The opposite of faith.
How many has he? How many should he have?
Well, yeah, okay. That's what we want to ask Graham next.
He's won. They won four. How many was he involved with? I'd say it's three at least, is he?
I got two.
Gonna go two.
These lads are good. These lads are good. One at wing back, one at full forward, Graham.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always said I was a poor man's Graham Geraghty. I followed your career just like about five levels below. Wing back, wing forward, full forward.
Stalker.
All right, last one. Team. Team, question three for team two. How many All-Stars does Sean Kavanagh have?
Five. Not enough. Is that right?
Four or five. Did you beat Peter?
I got five. Well done. Okay, so after round one, what are the scores, George Doors? 3-2?
3-2 Dublin. Okay.
3-2 to Dublin. Right, round two is what club does he play for round? So question one for the Dubs, team one. What club does Killian O'Connor play for? Okay, very good. Question one to team two. What club does Michael Fitzsimons play for? Shut up now on this round. What kind of a loser do you have to be to shout the answer? What? Croaks, no. No. Said Dr. Croaks, Kilmacool Croaks, it's Coola. All right, so at the moment it's 4-2. Question... I don't think you are. Question two for team one. What club does Paddy Durkin play for?
Casper Mitchells.
Oh, very good. I like the way you don't confirm.
Honestly.
Question two to team two. What club does Owen O'Gara play for?
Oh. Roland O'Gara.
Owen O'Gara. Munster.
Munster.
What?
Is this
Temple Oak?
Temple Oak, Sing Street. Right, yeah. So they have that one right.
I was going to
say. All right. Question three for team one. This is a difficult round, and there's a bonus in this round, right? So these fellas have two clubs, and you have to name... No, it's not me. And you have to name both teams they play for 2 points. What club and area team does Declan O'Sullivan play for?
Tramore. South Kerry.
Very good. And South Kerry. Oh, 2 points. These are good at this. Yeah. What club does Darren O'Sullivan play for?
The one day. Can we get it right? Can we get the 2 points?
No, there's no throwing it over.
The immediate type there was it 2 or 3 years ago.
Glen Garrett.
Two clubs.
He plays for an air like that. So
wait, he plays for. He plays for. Is it West Kerry? He plays for. I think. What club is Clipper?
It's one. It's a Kerry. Something Kerry.
West Kerry.
Mid Kerry. Now you need. You won't get his club anyway. So it's Glen Bay, Glen Carr. Right, yeah. Conan, how are we looking going into the last round?
7-3 to Dublin.
7-3 to Dublin. All right. Okay. So the last round is to name that team round. So you have 20 seconds to name as many of an All-Ireland winning team as you can. So we'll start the clock when I give the call for the clock. Name as many... Very scientific. Name as many of the All-Ireland winning Galway team 98. Go.
Sean
O'Donnell.
Silk.
Michael Donnellan. John Donnellan.
Derek Savage.
Kevin Walsh.
I said that twice.
Joe Bergen.
What do you think?
Three.
I got 14.
Can you turn Conan up? How many did I get?
Sean Gavin, I got about 14 himself there. Come on.
Okay. So, you need to name the 15 and the extended panel of 15 to have a chance here.
They named subs. John Donnelly started on that team, so that shouldn't count.
No, okay, yeah. We're not counting John Donnelly, but you're plucking at straws here, Liam, if I'm being honest. So, how many do you... Colin, how many do you think they got? About 8 or 9, I think.
Yeah, well, Mayo need 15.
Okay, so you need to name the 15 to draw, lads, right? Let's make this. You won. So, team 2... You need to name as many of the All-Ireland winning Donegal team from 1992.
James McKay, Martin McKay,
Manus Boyle,
Manus Boyle, Tony Boyle,
Martin McHugh,
Bonner Haggerty,
Bonner Haggerty, yeah,
the other McHugh, Martin McHugh and his brother.
Now, if you spend more time naming than complaining, it was only Geezer, being the competitor that he is, actually wanted to try with that game. The two of you spat the dummies out. All right,
I
listen.
I named 7 or 8 of them.
Did Dublin win it by a landslide? I don't know why we had it. And okay, I'm accused of being anti-Dublin, but this quiz I'm clearly not, right? Listen, that's all we have time for. The Dubs are the winners tonight. We'll see who wins on Sunday. It's going to be a classic. Thanks very much to all our guests, and thanks to our sponsors, AIB, for putting the whole show together with us. You know, without our sponsors, it wouldn't be possible. So thanks very much for coming. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back to their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.